Columbia City Council to order. Mr. City Manager, you want to kick us off?
Thank you, Mayor. So tonight, I just wanted to take time to talk about our plans for 2021 and do we see anything such as revenue options on the ballot for 2021? I know we're looking at a park sales tax for November of 2021, so that's on there, hopefully. And so I've asked Director Liu to put together some options for you as far as gas tax, sales tax, property tax. And so, you know, I just need to know, cut the budget this year to make, because of some of the raises we gave last year, because we didn't do anything with revenue. And so I just kind of want a picture of what we're going to do in the coming 21 as we think about, I'm already thinking about the budget for 22 and how all that impacts. And so as I go forward and develop that with Matthew, we just need a little direction on what you all see that our future looks like as far as our revenue picture. And so, Matthew, I'm going to turn it over to you to go through the slides, and we can have a discussion then.
Director Liu, good evening.
Good evening. So I want to start the presentation off discussing our current revenues. And so I wanted to talk about the revenues that are declining along with those that are increasing. As you can see here, cigarette, telecom, cable TV taxes, they're all on the decline and they're not expected to recover. Telecom alone has decreased 41% or $1.3 million. Over the last 5 years. And just to be clear with everyone, the 2020 numbers are, the final period of 2020 are estimated numbers, because we don't have those in yet. We won't expect to have those in until November. Also, I wanted to point out on this slide, the gas tax and how it does fluctuate and is down this year. We're estimating it to be down this year, but it's usually a pretty steady tax.
Gas online tax, right?
What'd you say?
Oh, there's just it's a typo. There's supposed to be gasoline tax, but it's a gas online tax.
Gas online.
Oh, wow.
That was a new one.
We're trying everything we can find.
this has been viewed by a few eyes, and they wouldn't wait to get here to see the typo.
It's all that social media expertise.
Okay, so here are our two revenues that are sort of on an increase. Property tax is on a pretty steady increase, just because property value seems to always increase. But sales tax increases slightly, but it does fluctuate quite a bit from year to year.
Mr. Liu?
Yes.
So for sales tax, even though it's technically increasing, $200,000 increase over 5 years is functionally flat, right?
Basically, yes.
And historically, Mr. Glasscock, or someone with longer historical knowledge, prior to the 2008 downturn, we kind of built our system around 6% sales tax increases annually. Is that in the vaunted good old days when we could pay our bills and expand our mandate and meet the people's needs?
That's correct, Mr. Trapp.
And now that we're far from that.
Correct.
It's a sad state, and that's a larger chunk of our by numbers too, correct? Yes, nine,
yes.
Seven, you know, 8 to 9 is a big jump. 23.3 to 23.5 is barely an increase.
Right.
Got a
question.
Yes.
Already a request.
I have those as
okay.
well. And I can have those sent to the council.
Thanks. And on the previous slide, there was the cable TV revenue.
Yes.
Is that the fee that Mediacom and Charter Communications pay the city As part of, okay, yes, so that's right. That's fallen from 950,000 to 690,000. Is that the yellow one?
Oh, no, it's the, cable yellow. TV. Yes,
cable TV,
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, because that was the money that was originally used to pay CAT TV.
That's correct.
Back in those first 5 years of that public access television. Great, thanks, Matthew.
Again, I'm just pointing out those 2020 numbers are based on period 12 estimations. But the last two slides, what this shows is how the city's general fund revenues are decreasing at a higher rate than those that are increasing. So we look at it, I think the decrease was about 24%. Decrease over those 5 years, while the our two main revenue sources that are slightly increased are only increased over as a 5% increase over those same 5 years.
You have the pilot transfer numbers also?
No, not with these slides, but I can, if you would like those numbers over a certain period of time, I can get those for you.
That's kind of the other major funding source for the general fund, is that correct?
Yes, it's one of the larger funds for the general fund. But that number also fluctuates with good year, bad year, hot, right, cold. So there, it's not as a, although they are rising, it's not a steady rise like property tax would be, or a steady fall like cigarette or telecom or those would be as well. Here's a current breakdown of the city sales tax. The city portion of sales tax is 2 cents. The 1 cent to the general fund, and then we have a quarter cent to both parks and capital improvement funds, and a half cent to transportation. Here we compare our sales tax rate to the here just showing the top 10 most populous cities, but we looked at the 20 most populous cities. And out of those 20 cities, Columbia ranked 14 in sales tax rate, 14th highest. None of these rates include TIF, TDD, CDD, or any of those other. This is just strictly the sales tax that is, it comes to the city. A 50 cent sales tax increase would generate an estimated $10 to $11 million.
And would that have to go before the voters?
Yes, every revenue that is mentioned here would have to go to a vote of the public.
Okay, thank you.
And Matthew, that says 50%. But you're saying it's half cent on the dollar.
Yeah, point five
cents on the dollar.
Yes.
Thank you.
Here's our property tax breakdown. Currently, we receive 40 cents per $100 of assessed valuation. A 10 cent increase is estimated to raise the taxes due on a home of $150,000, about $28 a year. And that same 10 cents would generate an estimated $2.2 million for the general fund, or, yes.
That's $7 per $100.
Yes.
That's a total of $7 per $100. Okay, thank you.
Per $100, yes. Okay. And the city's portion is only 40 cents of that.
I get it.
Yes. Yep.
And the cap, the ceiling on property tax for municipality is what? based on our based on the state auditor's report?
1 cent.
Total of 1 cent.
Total 1 cent. Yes. There's a ceiling that is set that the city would be able to go up to without a vote of the public. I think
0.4846 something.
Yes, it's slightly higher than what we have now.
Well, and the last time we looked at it, I think it would have generated, was it $500,000?
Right, a little less, four something.
Okay.
All right, so again, this compares the total levy of the city as well as the city breakout of the levy on this page. So of the 20 most populous cities in Missouri, Columbia has the 19th highest property tax levy.
That for the city levy or the total levy for 19th?
That is for the city levy. The total levy is we rank 12th for total.
You're the lowest in the top 10.
So Matthew, explain why some of those cities are above a dollar.
So the way that the cities get above a dollar with the tax levy is due to the debt. So you can do a general obligation bond and fund you can fund up to the amount of your principal and interest payments for the years. That's the way they can get over that a dollar. And there's also a statute that says that you can go 0.3 cents higher for a period of 4 years.
For the debt or for any reason?
No, that's just for the general fund. That wouldn't be for debt. That would just be, it still has to go to a vote of the public, but it would just be a general fund. It wouldn't be limited to any one specific thing.
Is there anything about how long that debt can be outstanding or how long you can stay over a dollar to repay that debt?
For general obligation?
Yeah.
20 years. You can go out to 20 years. I think, for example, the city of Kansas City passed an $800 million general obligation bond, and it will go the 20 years, the full 20 years, to pay it back.
They're paying that back through property tax increases?
Yes, that's how general obligation works. It's property tax. Okay, so now we kind of get into the state statutes and what they actually say. So state statutes set property tax levy for municipalities, general fund at a dollar per 100 assessed valuation. Again, this does not include a debt service levy that municipalities can use to generate for bond or other debt payments related to projects within the city. And here's your... Mr. Pitzer, what I just explained, the 30 cents per 100 that you can go up and above that $1, and it's for a period of 4 years. Some other alternative revenue sources, the gasoline tax. Gasoline tax increase can be used for construction or reconstruction, maintenance, repair, policing, lighting, cleaning of roads and streets. A 1 cent increase would generate an estimated $1 to $1.5 million.
So do we currently have what, a 2 cent tax then, or?
So I think it is each municipality, or I'm not exactly sure how it's written, but it's 17 cents that is given to the area, and then it's broken down by jurisdiction in a couple other different ways. So I think when we figured it out, we're getting somewhere between 5 and 7 cents.
Is that a dedicated tax under this statute, or is
no?
Or
that is separate. That is the sales tax that all municipalities get. It's a share, kind of like a cost share type of deal.
It's done by the state, and this would be done.
Yeah, the state.
I think the state passes it to the county, and the county disperses it.
It comes from MoDOT. It's split up by population. It's how much we get. It used to be around 300,000.
Okay, but we don't have any gas tax under this statute.
No, we do not. There's only a few places in Missouri that have these. Some towns along Highway 70, I believe Concordia has one, and a few other cities that are on Highway 70. So these are some of the things that we presented at the budget presentation, the budget retreat that we had a few months ago. You got your parks and recreation levy. You can go up to 20 cents per 100 assessed valuation, and then the health, solid waste, and museum levy, the same 20 cents per $100 of assessed valuation. And a local use tax, which I'm pretty sure we're all familiar with that one. What the use tax would generate would come from the calculation of how many people are buying online versus in store. So. And then some alternative sales tax. Fire protection sales tax, and then economic development sales tax. Any questions or anything I can help or add to the conversation?
Questions? Councilman Fowler.
We took to the ballot.
Oh, they're basically the same thing. You get the internet sales tax from the use tax. A use tax is set up to pay for people who buy things out of city or whatever, and they have to pay that same amount of tax that you would have if you were purchasing it from inside the city. So that works in big dollar amounts, like if you're buying equipment or you're building something. And then it also works online.
That means that if they would do it,
I think we would still have to pass. So we would still have to go to a vote of the people.
Let me walk through, and then I'll ask the city attorney to weigh in. The difference is in the collection method. Okay. So if we would adopt a local use tax, they would have the response. Taxpayers would have the responsibility of voluntarily remitting that when it exceeds a certain dollar volume mm-hmm. on their state income tax, which then gets remitted to us. Mm-hmm. If the state would take action and close the loophole, the State Department of Revenue would collect online sales taxes from Amazon, mm-hmm. other online retailers, remit our portion of that local sales tax use tax mm-hmm. to the City of Columbia, just like every other sales tax that is levied. There's probably should be another slide here that says under a local use tax, our take would be $900,000 to $2 million worth of that taxpayer voluntarily submitting their use tax. Because look, all of us, when we go buy something, none of us count up at the end of the year how much we've spent online. I think we'd probably all be surprised to know mm-hmm. what that volume is to voluntarily remit it. If the state collects that based on the retailers capturing that and collecting it at the point of sale on the website, City of Columbia's estimate would be about $9 million, $7 to $9 million. The problem with us doing another use tax before the state does theirs is that we may be in jeopardy of having to pass it a second time based on the ballot language that the state author enables us through that enabling legislation to levy. Would you add anything to that? Is that about right?
That's it. Yeah, that is the layman's way of saying there is. It's really
I'm
about
nothing if not plain spoken.
No, exactly. It's putting it down into a nutshell of what the issue is about. It's about who is collecting and paying the tax. There are actually a lot of retailers currently that can collect that tax at the point of sale, and I don't know that we have a really great number on that. There has been a great deal of analysis at the state, so you know I have no doubt that the numbers the mayor is providing us are the accurate numbers for that, because it significantly increases your collection ability with what we call the Wayfair fix, which is closing that loophole that he described. Absolutely, puts the burden on even the smallest of online retailers to collect and remit that tax, which currently fall through the cracks. The larger ones, the Amazons, your larger retailers like your Walmarts and your Targets, and those entities already are collecting the tax at the point of sale. We're not receiving it, however, because we don't have a use tax currently approved by the voters. So you have to, it is that two, before we can actually assess and collect that use tax, we have to have it approved by the voters. They don't get it. They're not assessing it.
Pay it.
So the
paying something less than the full amount they otherwise would pay, but
the retailers are remitting the state portion of that sales tax, correct. The 4.4 cents. Yeah.
The state has a use tax in place.
The state has an agreement with the retailers. I'm not sure they have a statewide use tax.
So it's interesting. The language is different on the state sales tax. It's actually imposed as a state sales and use tax, much like our downtown CID has a sales and use tax when it was approved by the voters. So the downtown CID, their sales tax is actually a sales and a use tax because that was the language that was approved. But for our local sales tax, it was not ever deemed to be a sales and use tax. So it's much, yeah.
Question. I've got a question for Nancy.
Oh, Mr. Thomas.
So it sounded then, Nancy, as though you said if we were to pass a local use tax, we would start getting our 2% from the particular retailers that the state has an arrangement with.
There would be a percentage of them that you would begin collecting from
without the state legislature taking any action.
Correct.
Okay.
Amazon is definitely one.
Amazon's one, because yes. And it's because they've got a facility in Missouri, right?
They decided that they would pay without it being imposed.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Any additional questions? Oh, I'm sorry, Dr. Peters.
I just have a question mainly for you, Brian. Do you have any idea where we are with the state use tax? I mean, every year they're like, oh, yeah, yeah. But then there's, a conservative crowd that says that we need to decrease property taxes if we're going to get a use tax. And I just don't know where.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think there's, in some of my discussions with the governor's office, I think there was a willingness to have a second or third special session to address that, and I think that is a good venue to do it because it brings the focus on just that issue without all the other concomitant issues that tend to threaten that. I think there is where we ended up at the end of last year's legislative session, I think, created the framework for some progress on this. We actually had passed a bill creating the ballot language that would allow cities to do that. Some other things got mixed up with that, and the governor vetoed the bill, unrelated to that Wayfair language. The discussions that we had as a result of some of that filibuster, I think, revealed that, you know, a lot of Councilman Thomas saw that declining revenue from the cable franchise fee. There are some legislators that want to completely phase that out, and for a community like Columbia that has gone from $900,000 to $600,000, I would gladly forfeit a $600,000 franchise fee in exchange for a $9 million online sales tax. Make that deal any day. There are some cities in St. Louis and some smaller cities that rely on that cable franchise fee for a bulk of their revenues. They don't want to make that deal. So now you've got cities fighting against cities on that. And, you know, I think the better opportunity would be to find some type of reasonable offset. If the state wants to escrow their money for the next 2 years until the dust settles on this, that's great. If they want to spend half of it for capital improvements and bank the rest, but at least let the cities avoid a local tax increase by collecting the sales taxes that are already being generated. This is not a new tax. We're simply leveling the playing field for brick-and-mortar retailers that are being disadvantaged through the current taxing scheme. And it's never been more pronounced since, but for the pandemic, when more people are buying, shopping online, staying at home, producing more trash, which requires more refuse collectors to go pick it up. I mean, it's the perfect storm as far as, you know, city revenues go. I don't know if that answers your question.
It does, because I mean, we've been talking about this for like 3 years, because at some point it's like we need to move on past this if we're not going to get any help from the state. And, but yeah, I keep hoping we're moving closer to getting help from the state.
I think we're close. And, you know, the other, if, you know, in terms of timing, I think if the legislature, if they don't do it in a special session or something after November 3rd, before January 1, clearly there's a plan to take this up again. Nothing ever passes till the last week. That puts us at May 15th-ish. And Madam Clerk, the deadline to put something on an August ballot, my recollection is
the first
have
meeting
it introduced and first read in May and voted on at the first meeting in
second meeting in May,
and voted on the first meeting in what's the month after May?
No, June. We'd have to introduce it the first meeting in May. It'd have to be voted on by the second meeting in May.
Yeah. So and
on the August ballot, yeah.
Right, and
August
the problem ballot. With that is Governor has until July 15th to sign legislation that takes effect August 28th. I don't think you ever get an emergency clause done. So then we're banking on, is the governor going to sign the bill that has the ballot language that puts it on the ballot in August? Our August election is going to be prior to the effective date of the bill, and so that really puts us at November of 21.
Right, to do it properly.
You agree with all that?
I agree with that, and I don't have the November ballot dates on my
August.
And it's August as well, so you would have to actually pass legislation to put it on the November ballot before the effective date, unless it has an emergency clause. So you'd have to have your legislation placing it on the ballot in August for the November election. It is very it's a complicated time frame without the special session. Much delay, and then you're going to, even if it passes, then you're the first quarter of the next quarter before you're going to actually implement.
Have we moved into general discussion, or can we?
Sounds good. Any other questions for Director Lou?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Matt.
So, you know, that's a grim picture that we've looked at, and we had a tough budget year. And in recovery, there's a saying, if nothing changes, nothing changes. Or if you keep doing what you're doing, you keep getting what you're getting. And I look out and see a bunch of department directors who are going to be laying off employees next year. And I look at a city, if we don't do anything. The Wayfair is obviously our preferred way to move forward. And I appreciate the mayor and Ms. Thompson's and Dr. Peter's work on that issue. It's far and away the least objectionable of all of the objectionable things that we can do to address it. But it's not under our control. It's highly uncertain. And there are ferocious calendar dates that tell me that we're not going to get anything that's going to impact the 2021 budget, maybe not the 2022 budget, and that bothers me about where we're at. I think when we look, so we have really three options. We can do nothing. We can roll the dice and hope for a Wayfair fix, or we can look at our other list of potential options and pick the least worst one, because there aren't any good options on the table. And I think that third option is the way that we should move forward, with a modest property tax increase that would not be inappropriate even if a Wayfair fix came in down the road. That would allow us to shore up our financial situation and also take on some projects that COVID recovery is going to require. There's a lot of hardship out there. I don't know how much people see that directly, but a good friend of mine, was evicted from his home and has been sleeping in city parks, and there's not a lot of help for him. And someone who works hard went from being a contributor to this society to someone who's playing cat and mouse games with our parks and police staff so that he has a place to lay his head. And I could tell you other stories. Every day I deal with stories and people call me for help, and most of the time I can't do anything. And so we have some long-standing needs, a homeless day center that has capacity for an inclement weather shelter, an adult service center that could, there's, you know, a facility need, an operational need. We've put some community development block grant money in there, but that's not enough to bring in a big player like a Burrell Behavioral Health or someone who has some capacity to do large projects. Certainly support for affordable housing, transit, workforce development. There's lots of need. There has been a call for this. It was called defunding police, only we're a step ahead of that because we have a low amount of funding for police per capita already. What we need is the piece that funds quality of life issues and then also allows us to shore up our financial state. So I believe that this is something that we should offer up to the voters in good conscience. I don't want to go into another budget year like we had last year. We've mostly been able to keep the cuts invisible, but we laid off 11 employees, not because they weren't doing a good job or their work wasn't important to the quality of the city, but because we didn't have the money to keep them on. We can't forestall raises, and so we're going to lose more, and we're not going to be able to put out and address these issues. So I think we should prepare, and then if there's a special session, we can decide that we want to change course. If there's not, then we could do something that would not obviate a future Wayfair tax. But I think we ought to do something to improve our revenue picture, to control our own destiny, and to preserve our ability to provide quality services and address the most pressing issues in the community.
Thomas.
Yeah, thanks. Well, I agree with everything that Mike just said. A constituent of mine was evicted from her home in August, and she's living at my house now because she wouldn't have anywhere else to live. And there is a constant pressure for thousands of Columbia residents living on low incomes or no incomes, which is just pushing people to the financial brink. We've seen demand for human services and social services surge recently, and there have been temporary fixes from the federal government and temporary stays on evictions, but it's going to get a whole lot worse. And this is a time for compassion and also for justice, because the people who are suffering now do not deserve this. This is the result of conspiring forces completely out of the control of the people who are losing their jobs, losing their homes, losing their health care, and spiraling into a very desperate situation. There's certainly an urgency to act, but act we can. And I think that the property tax increase that Mike mentioned is one way to do it, a progressive way to fund basic needs as well as keep our city running in its normal operations, because the city is suffering in the same way. And we do have to look ahead to how our economy is not functioning well for so many people. Probably 20-25% of our population are in these struggling conditions. The rest of us, I mean, I think most people in this room have not been barely touched by the pandemic. We have ridden through it. We have the kind of jobs that persist. We can work from home very often, protect ourselves, but the gap between our condition and that of the bottom 20-25% has grown, and it's going to get much worse. So I had, John, I thought you were going to produce some kind of a report on human services needs and social services needs for this meeting, but maybe that's something you could bring to us in a little bit.
Well, again, I need to kind of know what you want brought forward. I mean, what price tag? I mean, what are we looking at? And so is it on the – so if we're going to look at something that you and Mr. Trapp are talking about, is it the health solid waste piece of the Constitution? Are we looking at that piece of it? Are you looking at straight general fund pieces that Matthew are we looking at that?
Well, I mean, I think
I kind of got to know what we're looking at before
Mike,
I can bring
Mike
a program
mentioned
forward.
The homeless day center and emergency shelter. Housing assistance is greatly needed. Utility assistance, public transit improvements, and workforce development and small business support. Those are the things. I don't know how the state law would categorize them. I would think a general, increase would be needed. But what I was really hoping for was not, specific to that, but what does the Human Services Director see as the greatest needs right now? And what about the Housing Division? Steve Hollis did produce a report. I believe it was in January. You mailed it to us, John, I think in about May or June. And maybe it was on an agenda in January, but I don't know. I don't remember seeing it at that earlier time, but it was dated January, and it's called something like High Utilizers Initiative, and it's kind of what we're looking for. But if that was written in January, it's kind of out of date now.
Exactly. And we'd have to go back and refresh that.
The pandemic has made things much worse. I mean, it called for several new staff positions, one, I think, working between human services and the law enforcement, court system, jail system, the whole criminal justice system, to provide relief for people that are just bouncing around between these systems and provide much better services that they need. Another one was a full-time person working with the homeless population, which Steve in that report said he needed. And then there's a series of other things, and some of them are kind of stretch requests, and some of them are maybe more achievable. But I think that's the kind of thing that I was hoping to see updated.
Yeah, and I think probably some of the things that we're looking for is more in the realm that Stephanie and Chief Jones are working on as far as that co-responder unit.
I think that's...
We got competing interest here, and so there's only so much staff time to develop these programs that you're looking for. I would say Steve's report that was back in January definitely needs to be refreshed and brought forward if that's what you want. And so I'm just looking for some direction so we can bring something forward so we have a consensus on what we're doing and we're not doing four or five different programs that then we're going to decide in the future what we're going to do
with them.
That's what I'm looking for.
I think our human services program, does a good job with what it has. It just needs more. I'm not suggesting we start
more
new programs, but where are the greatest needs? And our human services professionals can tell us, how serious the needs are and where additional resources should be put.
Yeah, I would say it depends on who you ask is what resources we need. Yes, the health and human services, absolutely, we need in this time of year, what we're going through in the pandemic, yes, they need more support. I would also tell you that, so does solid waste, so does police. I mean, we got a lot of things. I was just trying to bring things forward to get a consensus or where you all lie. Is there a focus that I need to work on more than anything else? And so that's what I'm looking at for now is what are we going to what do you want me to bring forward in 21, and, you know, those kind of things. Because we only got so much staff time, and especially with the pandemic, we're stretched pretty thin right now.
Yeah, well, my interest is in services that help the people that are struggling the most.
And so I would ask you, you know, is that me putting on staff to help people? Is that money to help people? You know, I heard you describe, you know, two or three staff positions. Is that what you're looking for?
Well, I didn't describe them. Steve Hollis described them. They were in his report written in January. Okay. But I thought they looked like a good idea.
Okay.
And what I'm hoping for is an update on that in the light of, you know, 7 months of a pandemic and an economic downturn.
Any further discussion? Mr. Scala.
Yeah, just to try and understand this question and this discussion, and let me couch it in terms of what you would like to see in terms of consensus. I think, Mr. Thomas, you're mentioning that your focus, and a legitimate focus, no question about it, is the underserved to the extent that they are really suffering. Mr. Trapp also mentioned layoffs within the city. I mean, there's a whole host of needs and you might even consider them underserved needs, depending if you consider that in terms of layoffs. But so there's two categories really. There's this kind of the social need category that you're referring to especially, and then there's a category generally that we see reflected in this report, that is our revenues decreasing over time to the tune of several million dollars per year. And you, Mr. Trapp, rightly brought up the issue of we can't just depend on the state. We know what that's like. We keep on waiting and we keep getting slashed. So I guess I see this as trying to define or recognize or gain consensus behind what it is that we're going to ask for. If we've decided that we're going to ask for some sort of property tax increase, the reality of the politics is that the more things that you try and combine in that ask, the less potential you have for successfully getting that tax across. It kind of reminds me of the ask a few years ago when the big ask at that, think about how things have changed, but the big ask at that time was for public safety, for police officers and firefighters and so on, and people were throwing around numbers about 40 or 50 officers, and we were talking about a 30 cent tax increase, and it went down in flames probably because it was a bit too aggressive at the time and so on. But things have changed now. We're not alone. We're talking about defunding the police now rather than increasing that kind of budget. But those legitimate questions, I think we need to kind of prioritize them to find out if we're going to make an ask with respect to property tax. I would suggest that we try and maximize our success potential by making it as specific as possible. But there are there's a panoply of needs. I mean, the city manager has just mentioned a few of them, all the way from, well, obviously. I mean, solid waste is a good example of that, among other things. And the future for those needs is not bright, particularly in view of this pandemic. So that's just my take on how we can split this up and what the strategy might be should we decide to go in that direction.
Any further discussion? Councilman Fowler.
Thank you, Mayor. So I have a couple of questions. Given that the timeline, should we put a property tax on the ballot? And my recollection of when I pay my property taxes, which is at the end of the year, means that we wouldn't see any revenue from this until the end of 2021.
Right.
So the what constituents are telling me during the pandemic is that they're looking for a compassionate response from the city, whether that's with utility shutoffs, whether it's with services that we're providing. And I know we have a model through Steve Hollis's office that we use that $800,000 approximately every year to purchase services out there. So we have a model there. Do we have a model where the city would loan itself the money ahead of time, because the needs are now, they're not at the end of 2021. Absent more federal funding coming through, we have folks that are gonna, I mean, are we gonna have them tread water with no home or stability from now until the end of 2021? So
it's a quandary I don't know the solution to, except that the city residents are looking to us for a compassionate response to the dire circumstances that some of our residents are facing.
What I would tell you is we do have a designated loan fund that we borrow from ourselves that possibly could be used for what you're asking, but we have to pay interest on that to ourselves, I guess. So there is a possibility there, should you want to use it.
But we still have a time delay. Would we take a risk ahead of time, regardless of the outcome of the election, and go ahead and borrow that money from ourselves to address these very urgent needs? Or would we have to wait until we had a successful outcome at the ballot box, even though we weren't going to see the money until the end of the year? So again, we're still, you know, what are we doing about the circumstances now? That's the part, and I know everybody else is struggling with this. I'm not suggesting that you're not and that you've already thought of it, but it's an important part of this conversation.
Sure.
Thank you.
Sure. I would tell you that we just went through the budget process and we passed the budget, and that's what I'm bound to do. I mean, I have to follow that, what you've directed me to do. I have to follow the ordinances that are in place. So I guess I'm looking for you for direction on how you would want to do what you're asking me to, what the compassion piece that you want me to do is.
And I'm not unsympathetic to the current environment and many of the challenges that our constituents find themselves in. I am concerned about raising property taxes in the middle of a pandemic, because that has the potential to have the opposite effect of what you're doing, because it puts those that are already on the bubble of housing insecurity having to come up with higher property taxes. Even if they're renting, that property owner is going to pass the higher taxes to them in the form of higher rents. And, you know, look, I want to fund the things that not only a majority of our constituents want us to fund, but things that, you know, we can all agree on, like building and staffing our two fire stations and fully funding our police department to get the community policing that we all want to better serve our neighborhoods. But I don't want to go into this thought process by thinking, how much money can we raise and then what are we going to spend it on? I'd rather identify what are our needs, maybe through the Finance Audit and Advisory Committee or a revenue commission, to look at, have we exhausted all the potential revenues that are there? Are we making wise use of the taxpayer resources we have now? And what are we currently not meeting based on our citizen satisfaction surveys is where, you know, where my head is on this. Any further discussion? My priority, and thank you, Mr. Trapp, remains the Wayfair fix, because I do think that gives all of us some, it's not a tax increase, it's something that we should be collecting now. Clearly, if you want to go to the pandemic model, clearly our spending habits have changed. Consumerism has changed. More people are ordering online. There's more demand for city services despite that. And that remains my fix. I'm just, to your point, it's a good one. We wouldn't see the revenue from either one of those solutions till the end of it. Any further discussion? Mr. Thomas.
I would propose that the Wayfair fix would harm the low-wealth, low-income property owners at least as much, but probably more, than a small property tax increase, because they will start paying that sales tax component on things that they're ordering from outside the community or outside the state, which I think would come to more than...
But it's something, had they bought it at a local retailer, whether that's Boone County Lumber or Book Raiders Jewelers, they would be paying that same tax.
Mm-hmm.
And right now you have people that go to Lowe's and look at a snowblower and decide to go order it online at Lowe's.com and it gets shipped to their house and they don't pay sales tax.
Well, I mean, I agree with you. In the big picture, a use tax is fair and much better for our local businesses. But it is a sales tax, and it is regressive, whereas a property tax or an income tax is progressive and puts the burden on the people that can best afford it.
Any further discussion? Any further comments?
Just one comment, and you reminded me in terms of sales tax being regressive, and we have this conversation every once in a while. And to some degree, once a year, at least we used to for school purchases and whatever, there was some taxes that were forgiven for particular reasons, and it always comes up, food and shelter and so on and so forth. That's the kind of forgiveness program, I think, that might have a more immediate impact on the folks that we're talking about, the ones that are affected the most. So maybe that's a potential option for moving forward and getting some of the aid that's necessary to the folks in a timely fashion.
Councilman Fallon.
May we use this opportunity to enable a comprehensive revenue task force of a defined length so that we can task them with not only thinking through these things, seeking input from our citizens and our residents, and also identifying the needs to which it could be put given, I mean, we have lots of data, and our formats don't allow us to sift through all of that. So I'm struggling with how to best, I know we've talked about it. I don't know, is there a particular obstacle that's in the way to keep us from doing that?
No, do you want it as a task force, like we brought back that growth impact study? I'm reluctant to create another board and commission.
Me too.
When the chair of the Finance Audit and Advisory Committee suggested this to us pre-COVID, my thought was, let's do this relatively short, 4 to 6 months, have it be a broad base of bankers and taxpayers and trusted financial experts, and, you know, take a look.
Some low-income people as well.
Yeah, taxpayers. And look at how, you know, the city collects its revenues, where we're spending it. Do we have a revenue problem? Do we have a spending problem? What are the potential solutions? This slide presentation is helpful. And, you know, sift through some of that. I guess we could refer it to the Finance Audit and Advisory Committee,
that's a question that I have. Maybe this is a task, an additional task, not beyond the purview of the mission of the Finance and Audit Committee, for them to engage this and engage some of the folks that we're talking about here before constructing this brand new task force to have a limited amount of time. We could hit the ground running with some of this process and get some feedback in a much more timely fashion.
Would you be comfortable if we started there? And
well, I'm feeling a sense of urgency about getting that underway because there are deadlines that the city clerk will tell us as to when we need to have, if we're going to put something on the ballot, when that we have to meet that and work backwards from that with, you know, first read, second read, all of those things. And we've talked about it long enough and kicked around ideas for it. I would like us to just go ahead and enable a task force, give them a short timeline, and move forward with all deliberate speed, because again, the community is asking us for a compassionate response to our neighbors who are suffering, and that encompasses a lot of the things that we've already exhausted our funding for through all the different ways that we took in funds to help. So let's not study it any, I mean, let's bring forward an ordinance to create a task force.
Okay, so even if we did that, just like with Mr. Thomas's growth impact study, we now have a resolution. Assuming we pass it tonight, if we advertise and appoint it, that's another meeting. And now we ask the Finance Audit and Advisory Committee to convene a process now. And if you want to, you just want to say decree it, the chair's here, we can talk to her at the break and see if they want to do that.
If the Finance and Audit Advisory Committee doesn't have a large amount of workload right now, I would love to just ask them to jump right in if they have capacity.
And invite those diverse people into the conversation?
Exactly. Kind of make them.
I'm good with that.
Any task force is going to take some time even to get accustomed to what the entire problem is, and these folks have been wading into it for some period of time.
Mr. Trapp.
You know, obviously, I would have preferred to have moved forward with something. There's something of often there's an appearance that creating a task force is kicking the can down the road. But we do need to move forward if that's the only way that we can get a consensus to move forward. Something's better than nothing. So I think working through the Finance Advisory Commission is fine. They could convene a work group and look at, and maybe that will bring some greater public awareness to what is our structural financial problems was presented to me as a council candidate 9.5 years ago, and we've not done anything to address it. So I don't know if there's any groundbreaking news to the fact that sales tax is in all intents and purposes in decline in real dollars per capita massively, and our needs are not also shrinking in that same manner. I would add, if we did a property tax, we could bond on that property tax, and we could front load projects and have greater impact up front, as well as forestall our declining financial position.
Okay, everyone comfortable with Mr. Thompson?
And maybe Sheila, could you just clarify if a question like this was going to go on the ballot at the April or August or November? When would those council ordinances need to be passed?
For April, it would have to be passed by the second meeting in January. For August, it would have to be passed by the second meeting of May. And for November, it would have to be passed for the second meeting in August.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Dr. Peters.
So if we put it on, if we were aiming to potentially put it on the August ballot, then that would become... The tax rates would go up the next year then, most likely? So they would go up for 2022?
Well, exactly how that would work.
Nancy, what's the effective date of a property tax increase?
Yeah. So if we had it on the August ballot and it passed? No. So it would be better to put it on the April ballot if we could get that. If we want to do a property tax.
Property tax.
Wait, which tax are we talking about? Okay.
Property.
All right. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Okay. I would move that we adjourn and come back in 30 seconds.
No,
City council meeting. Y'all can get a water.
Oh, thank you. 0 minutes.